please, the dance is about to begin.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine. Whose world is this?
It's mine.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine.
I sip the dumb peak watching Gandhi till
I'm chopped. Hey, yo, what's going on? This is Aaron bringing you episode 81 of the Semi-Social Life of a Black Introvert podcast. I want to thank all of you all around the world who are here in this space, in this platform, listening to a semi-social black introvert making his way through life. I'm trying to make my way through life. I'm proud of what we've built here. This podcast is almost 3 years old. I remember the early episodes in which I was trying to quit. I literally was trying to quit. I was afraid of giving my heart, my opinions, my thoughts, my mind to the world. I didn't know how the world would react. I didn't know if people would listen. I tried to quit, but your words, your encouragement, your investment kept me coming back. When I started this podcast 3 years ago, I wanted it to be almost a Charlie Murphy, True Hollywood Stories type of deal. I've been in a lot of funny situations. I've seen a lot of things. I have a sort of a weird sense of humor. My plan was almost for this to be a storytelling time, to make people laugh, to make people reflect, to make people just have a good time. That was the first episode. The first episode was called 2 Hour Thug, in which I explained and told you all how pretty much in 1 week, I have about 2 hours of real thug in me. 2 hours that will fight, argue, throw down, handle it with violence, whatever it may be. I got about 2 hours, but once that 2 hours is up, I'm tapped out. I was sharing the humorous side. My goal was to bring lighthearted conversation, make a couple people laugh, and that's it. Then episode 2 hit. And it changed everything. It changed really the path of this whole podcast. Because the following week, there was a police shooting. And so I had to make a choice. Do I talk about something lighthearted or do I share who I really am? A semi-social black man in America. Which one do I tackle? Which path do I go? So I went down the path of sharing my heart. And then in the following weeks, there was a large fight at Disneyland involving an African-American family. And it became a huge topic nationwide. And so I made the choice as a semi-social black introvert, as a black man in America, to break down some of the family dynamics and the hurts that exist within our community. And yet I was fearful still. I didn't want to proceed with the podcast. And then episode 13, I believe, Husbandology. I released that episode and essentially highlighted the mental health struggles that I was fighting as a man, as a husband, as a father, growing up, the perceptions of being a man, what I needed to be. And I dropped that episode and I woke up that next morning and I told myself, like, I'm done. I exposed too much of my heart. I gave the world too much. I shared too much. I was too transparent. I was committed to quitting this podcast on that day. And just as I was signing in to stop the episode, to quit the whole podcast, to cancel it all, I saw a message from a listener saying that she listened to the episode from a country I've never been. I've never met her, but she knew my voice. She listened to the episode and she said that she could relate and that my words gave her a different perspective on manhood, on the struggles that men face. Her words in episode 13, those type of words, that type of encouragement, her investment has brought me here to episode almost 200, I believe. I realized the importance of sharing my heart, my thoughts, my opinions as a black man in America. This platform, this podcast is a creative space, a safe place for me to share who I am. The good, the bad, and ugly. It's not about being right or wrong. It's about being a person of purpose, of wanting to make the world better. Each episode has a different flavor. There's some episodes that are funny that I really enjoy. There's some episodes in which I try to do more of a teaching element to it, because after all, I am an educator. And there are some episodes that are tough to do because they hit too close to home. I've done episodes about Breonna Taylor. It's tough to do. How do you explain a woman being murdered within her own home by law enforcement? I did an episode about Ahmaud Arbery, the murder of Ahmaud Arbery, and how he was chased down, hunted, essentially, by a group of white men in Georgia that conveniently accused him of stealing from a house in the neighborhood in which I guess they lived, stealing materials from a house that was being built. And so they took matters, they took his life into their hands and they murdered him. Cold blood killers. Those episodes hurt. I did an episode about George Floyd, his murder, the trauma that worldwide we felt. As a black man and watching that video, it hurt. My heart broke. I did an episode last year called Strong Black and Tired as F. I'll let you fill in the F. In which I shared more of my heart. I'm strong, I'm black, but I'm tired. America is wearing me out. I need a place to go, but where to go, especially in the pandemic? This existence is so tiring at times because you constantly have to fight. You're in a battle. As a person of color, you're in a battle, and the battle that you're in is more so in people's minds because of how they perceive you. I can't just go to the grocery store because, well, I'm a black man going to a grocery store. I'm a big black man going to a grocery store. I've been followed in so many grocery stores, places that we all shop. It ruins the experience. I'm tired of having to explain racism and implicit bias to people who don't want to listen. I'm tired of protesting. I'm tired of the walk. When people ask me about protesting, it's like I protest every day. When I wake up, when I leave my house, my protest begins. I go to work and I protest. I go to the grocery store, I protest. My life is a protest. And some days I'm just tired. Some of these topics are so hard to tackle because while other people view them, some of us have to live them. I look at movies in the same way. I haven't watched the Netflix movie on the Central Park Five because I'm not ready emotionally. I normally catch movies like that in 12 Years a Slave. I normally catch them probably about 3 to 5 years after they've been released because it's not a movie to me. It's life. It's life. And sometimes life is so tiring. This episode today is a topic that, once again, it's emotional for me because it hits so close to home. My home is Columbus, Ohio, the city in which I was born. The city in which my family, we all live here. But it's also a city experiencing unrest because of the recent police shootings in the past year, leading up to Micaiah Bryant, 16-year-old who was shot and killed by a member of law enforcement this week. 16 years old, her life ended. You know, I didn't really know and appreciate life at the age of 16. At the age of 16, I believed that I was going to live not forever, but for a very long time, and all my friends would too. But I soon realized that is not the case. 16, to die at 16, to be murdered at 16, to be killed at 16, doesn't make sense to me. And listen, I'm a man of faith. I believe in God. And yet stuff like that, it just doesn't make sense because they're too young. Have you really lived anything? Have you experienced anything at the age of 16? I'm 36 right now. I feel like I'm just starting to understand life, but at 16, it doesn't make any sense to me. Micaiah Bryant is dead. And her death, it comes at a time in which much of Black America is tired because we're having to still emotionally process within the past 2 weeks the murder of a young Black man in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, by the hands of law enforcement. A police officer said that she meant to reach for her taser, but instead drew her weapon. Instead of shooting her taser, she shot and squeezed the trigger of her gun, killing him as he was getting back into his car. The death of Micaiah Bryant also comes on the very same day in which Derek Chauvin was convicted of killing, of manslaughter, of killing George Floyd. For some people, that was a victory. For some people, that was a case that will change the landscape of America. For me, as a Black man, I see no victory when someone has to lose their life. There's no cause of celebration when George Floyd is dead. There aren't any reasons to party after bloodshed, after loss of life. And yet on that same day in which the verdict was read, as I was emotionally processing the verdict. I hear about Micaiah Bryant being shot and killed by a member of law enforcement here in the city in which I live. My heart was broken. My heart is broken. As an educator, as a man, as a father, as a black father, to know and to understand that a 16-year-old black girl is dead breaks my heart. What went wrong on that day? What happened on that day that took Micaiah Bryant's life? The more I read into the case, the more I looked at the body cam footage from the officers and from surveillance footage, the more I began to understand that Micaiah Bryant's life was stolen, was taken. She was killed because of a system failure. The system around her failed her. And in failing her, it cost her her very life. The system that should have protected her, let her down. And now, 16-year-old Micaiah Bryant is dead. I've heard so many stories, you know, people saying that, well, you know, she did have a knife. She was attacking someone with a knife. As a black father, as an educator, listen, we were all 16 once. When you're 16, your brain is still developing. You don't make the greatest decisions because your brain is learning how to establish boundaries. Your brain is learning how to say no, how to control your emotions. The 16-year-old brain and body is so moved by emotions. The actions of a 16-year-old are so rash. Instead of processing, they react. Instead of thinking things through fully, they react emotionally. Instead of thinking about tomorrow, you're concerned with the now. Micaiah Bryant made a quick decision, fueled by, I would say, rage, fueled by anger, fear, fueled by trauma. She made a decision that in the eyes of many justifiably cost her her life, but I am here to push back on that. Because instead of blaming Micaiah Bryant for her death, I want to show you all how the system around her, the system that we're a part of, has failed her and so many like her. Micaiah Bryant was in foster care. In fact, the place that she was murdered, she was living in a foster home with her sister. Now, y'all, I don't know Micaiah Bryant. I don't know her family. I've never met them. But what I do understand is that oftentimes with youth in foster care, there's some sort of element of trauma. Something went wrong within the home. Because in a perfect world, kids live with their parents. In a perfect world, kids live with their parents and with parents who are investing in them, who have all the resources, parents who give their kids whatever they need. But y'all, we don't live in a perfect world. Sometimes parents have trauma and they're raising their kids in the midst of their own trauma. Sometimes things happen in parenthood in which the parent doesn't have the resources to raise the child, which causes trauma for the child, which causes abandonment issues for the child, which causes anger within the child. I'm not using this platform, this space to throw stones at Micaiah's parents. Nah, because I get it. As a parent, sometimes you just don't have the tools and the belt to give to your child. Sometimes your perfect world is not so perfect and things happen. I believe Micaiah Bryant was in a things happen situation. She was in foster care, living with her younger sister in a foster home. Imagine that feeling for Micaiah, that feeling of hurt, abandonment. In fact, they say that all she wanted to do was go back home and live with her mom. That's what her goal was as a 16-year-old. She wanted to be reconnected with her mother because even though she lived in a foster house, it wasn't home. How many of us can relate to that? Sometimes we just want to be home. As a 36-year-old, I just want to be home. As a 16-year-old, she just wanted to be home, but she was in a situation. Micaiah Bryant, allegedly, they say that she called the police. She was the one who called the police on that day, reporting an altercation that was taking place outside of her home. She called the police. She did the right thing. She called the police. We teach our kids when things happen, call the police. When you don't feel protected, call the police. When you don't feel safe, call the police. She did the right thing, and yet within her teenage mind, within that mind that is still developing, within that brain that is still developing, she still had rage. She didn't see any stop signs. She was emotionally driven. The police arrived 12 minutes later. Do you know how many things can happen in 12 minutes? How much rage you can build up in 12 minutes. How much fear you can build in 12 minutes. Micaiah Bryant was probably at a boiling point. Her foster mother has even came out recently and stated that the cause of the altercation, she believes, was a messy room. Couple of the foster parents' former foster children came back to the house and said that Micaiah and I believe her little sister's room wasn't cleaned up to the standard in which they believed it should have been cleaned. And in the mind of a 16-year-old, that can lead to an attitude change. Listen, I have two kids, a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. When I ask them to clean their room, when I tell them, clean your room, they get an attitude. They get an attitude. It's like, what are you telling me to clean my room for? Yeah. I believe it. When I was asked to clean my room at that age, attitude. because that sort of comes with that age until you learn how to manage your emotions and just do what you need to do. You're emotionally driven. Your emotions drive you. And so how does a situation that goes from your room is dirty escalate to the point in which the police have to be called? Escalate to a point in which someone is dead. Someone is murdered. What happened? I can tell you, no one was around. I watched the video. I saw the body cam footage. The people that should have been de-escalating the situation were filming. The people that should have been de-escalating the situation, in fact, were adding fuel to the fire. The people that should have been de-escalating the situation was kicking and fighting themselves. I looked at the video and all I could do was say, where are the elders? Where are the people in Makai's life? Where were the elders, the people, the community, and the lives of the two former foster children who told Makai that her room needed to be cleaned up and was dirty? Where were the people that said no, that should have said no? Where were the people that could bring peace to the situation? Where were the people that could de-escalate the situation? Where was the community? I saw on the video a man kick the young woman in the pink tracksuit. Listen, as a black man, as a black father, I was enraged. I was mad. I was ticked off because she needed more than that. No matter what side you're on, whether you're on Micaiah's side or the girl on the pink side in the pink jumpsuit, they needed more than just your kick. Your kick was not the remedy. They needed your heart. They needed your love. They needed your wisdom. Instead of putting hands on them, they needed arms around them. They needed your protection. Instead, they received your anger. Instead, they received your violence. I was heartbroken. Where was the community? The community failed Micaiah. The system of the community that should have protected Micaiah and those young women, it failed her. You know, as an educator, I tell my colleagues when they ask when kids fight, they're like, why don't the kids come and get me? Why don't they come and get us? We tell them when a fight happens, come and get us. And I tell my colleagues, they don't come and get you because they can't find you. You're too far away. You're not in the midst of their situation. And they don't trust you to solve it. You haven't built up that level of trust with them. Kids will find you if they can see you. Kids will find you if they know you are near. But if you distance yourself, if you hide, not only will they not come and find you, but you can't be found. You have to be present. You have to be aware. You have to be in the situation. You have to be involved. You have to be willing to be in the midst of the situation that can be a tough situation, in which emotions are flying, which rage is there, in which chaos can happen. But you have to be willing to be the element of peace. You have to be willing to be the bridge that opens up communication. You have to be willing to be a problem solver. You have to be available. I say it all the time, and I got this from ESPN. Your best ability is your availability. If you're not available, what are you really doing? Who was available to Micaiah and the other two that were in the altercation? Who was available for him? Who could have put down their phone? Who could have spoke some words of encouragement? Who could have reasoned? Who could have de-escalated the situation? The community failed Micaiah Bryant and the two other young women around her. Micaiah Bryant and those two other young women were in a situation that was getting too deep. And instead of having someone kick them when they're down, they needed someone to reach down and pick them up out of the situation that was swallowing them. I'm sure that when they first started arguing, they weren't thinking that someone's life would end that day. But if only they had a stop sign, someone who just said, "Stop. You're worth too much for this. Stop. This is getting out of hand. Stop. Let's deal with this today so that we don't regret tomorrow." Her community system failed her. The system was broken. Another system that failed Micaiah is the mental health and social work system that exists not only within her community, within her city, but within this nation. Because as a black child and a black child in foster care, the system is not meant to support you. It supports you especially as much as your white counterparts. The trickle down that someone like Micaiah would receive is drastically different from white female, white male. The resources are night and day. I'm not saying that she didn't have support. I'm not saying that there weren't people in her life that were trying. But what I am saying is that the system itself failed Micaiah, because the system is so rooted in racism and bias. It's so rooted in those two elements that how can it really help Micaiah? Now, before I get jumped on by social workers and counselors, I want to let you know, I too also work for a system that is not meant to help and to invest in people, and especially children of color. I am an educator. I enjoy my job. I find a lot of purpose in it, and yet I am also a black educator. I am a black male in the education, working in the education system. And I can look around, eyes wide open, to see the resources are different for children of color. The treatment is different for children of color. The programming is different. The investment is different. Historically, if you are a child of color, education was denied. It was denied to you. It used to be illegal for black children, for black men, for black women to read, to own books, to have books. If you were enslaved and you had books, you were beaten. Because the system was designed to keep knowledge away from you. And yet, here I am as an educator, and I work as an educator, and I work in a system that is not designed for people of color, and I have to recognize that in order to correct that. I have to recognize it and see it in order to adjust how I move as an educator. Same thing for social workers and counselors. Recognize that the system in which you work in is not for children of color. They weren't designed to help someone like Micaiah Bryant. The system has to be changed. The system has to be challenged. Because you, Micaiah, those like Micaiah need it to change. The mental health and social work system that should have protected Micaiah, that should have invested into Micaiah, did not give Micaiah enough. Micaiah Bryant is now dead. Which brings me to the other system that failed her. Law enforcement failed Micaiah Bryant. I know some have said, you know, Aaron, she had a knife. She had a knife, Aaron. What do you want them to do? They had to make a judgment call, Aaron. What did you want them to do with Micaiah Bryant? And to these people, I point out that, you know, in the eyes of law enforcement, historically, Micaiah Bryant is viewed as a threat. She's a black woman. Nah, let me bring that back. She's a black girl. But in the eyes of society, she's a black woman. Not only a black woman, she's an angry black woman. Not only an angry black woman, she's a big angry black woman. How do I know this? Because I, as I sit here right now talking to you, I am a big black guy. And if I take a stance on something, I am an angry big black guy. If I speak with authority, just as I'm doing right now, I am an angry, big black guy, and society perceives me a lot differently than what it would my white counterparts. Now listen, I'm about 6'1", 197 pounds. I wear about a 32 in jeans. I'm probably a little bit average size when it comes to that. Probably a little bit less than average, but yet when society looks at me, I'm almost, in my mind, in their mind, really, in their mind, that's the problem. In society's mind, I'm 7 foot, full of rage, full of strength that can't be controlled. I'm out of control. I'm a raging bull in a china shop. I am threatening and I need to be stopped. I'm also a person of rather dark complexion, which is a whole other challenge in society's eyes, because while some say the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice, for others, the darker the berry, the more threatening the berry, the more the berry needs to be rejected. Micaiah Bryant is not a skinny or a slim white girl. Yeah, I gotta go here. She wasn't a slim white girl. She was a black girl, 16, who was angry, who did not fall within the guidelines of how society views beauty. She wasn't a skinny white girl or a skinny white woman. She was a black girl. Probably a little bit bigger than what society would want her to be. She didn't fit the measurements of acceptability when it comes to how society views women. And as she was angry, and as she raged, as she was fearing for her life, in society's eyes, I'm telling you, in society's eyes, she was viewed as an angry black woman out of control and in need of excessive violence in order to stop what was going on. I ask you, if Micaiah were a skinny white woman or skinny white girl, would she have four bullets put into her? Look historically, would that have happened to her? I would venture to say no, even with a knife. Because society will protect what his eyes are enamored with. Brown-skinned Micaiah Bryant did not fit that mold. She was 16, being driven by her emotions, and law enforcement put four shots into Micaiah Bryant, killing her. Four shots into a 16-year-old. I've heard so many news stories say that she was fighting another woman, as if Micaiah Bryant was a woman herself. She was 16. It happens all the time with kids of color, in which historically society has given increased ages to black teens. So instead of being 14, society thinks you're 20. Instead of being 8, this world thinks you're 14, 13. The ages of black youth increase, and yet somehow their white counterparts, they say the same or are lessened. Case in point, we look at our former president. And so many said, we know, don't listen to what he says, you know, president with President Trump, let the boys will be boys. He is a 70-plus-year-old man, yet he's given the boy title, and somehow Micaiah Bryant is a 16-year-old girl, and society has given her the woman title as if she's 26 instead of 16. It's not fair, but it's America. People ask, what would you want law enforcement to do? You know, I don't know. Maybe giving her the capital treatment. What's the capital treatment, you may ask me? Well, you know, for all of those protesters, at least that's what some people call them. I call them domestic terrorists. But for all of those people, raging men and women at the U.S. Capitol building this past January, who stormed the Capitol, I wish Micaiah Bryant would have had that treatment. You know, you storm the Capitol, you break into the Capitol building, and what happened? Not much. Not much, because let's face it, most of those faces were white. The system will protect white faces. The system will protect white bodies. The system is made to protect white America. The system is not made to protect young black Micaiah Bryant. But if she couldn't get the capital treatment, maybe, just maybe, she can get the Kyle Rittenhouse treatment. You know, Kyle Rittenhouse, who killed protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin, he was walking around with a semi-automatic weapon as a teenager. Law enforcement, prior to the shooting, they gave him water and told him he was being a good American. Now imagine if that were a black teen. I don't think that they would be giving him water, and I don't think they would be calling him a good American, but that's a whole other topic for a whole other podcast. And then Kyle Rittenhouse shot and killed people. And as he was leaving the scene of the crime, as he was escaping, law enforcement was converging upon the situation. And as he saw them, he put his hands up, perhaps as an admission of guilt, of surrendering, as he held his automatic, semi-automatic weapon, only to see law enforcement drive right by him. He murdered, was it two people? And yet, Kyle Rittenhouse, because of the color of his skin, because he's a white boy, was given a special treatment that would not cover, that will not cover Micaiah Bryant. She had a knife. He had a semi-automatic weapon. He lived to tell about it. And he may even live to be acquitted. He gets to see tomorrow. She died. She was killed. Or perhaps, you know, Micaiah Bryant can get this, the Dylann Roof treatment. You remember the Dylann Roof? Dylann Roof, he went into a South Carolina church and asked the predominantly African-American church, the members, to pray with him. And they prayed with him, and then he turned his gunfire upon them, killing many congregants. Dylann Roof, he and his weaponry were taken into police custody, unharmed. And not only was he taken into police custody unharmed, they took him to Burger King, made sure that he was well fed as they took him to jail. Yeah, I wish Micaiah Bryant would have got the Dylann Roof treatment. Can she get the Dylann Roof with cheese? Yeah, with cheese. The Dylann Roof special. Whatever elements of de-escalation that were involved in that case, could they have been given to Micaiah Bryant? But they weren't. America protects its own, and in protecting its own, it did not protect Micaiah Bryant. It's tragic. Every system that should have protected Micaiah Bryant failed her. You know, as a black parent, as a black father, I'm also to blame. Men like me are also to blame. Black men, where are we? Where are we when situations like this pop up? I'm making a call and a charge to black men to be more present. We have to be present when situations like this show up. We have to be present with our hearts, with our minds, with our bodies, with our love, with our wisdom. Because our children are dying. Our children are dying. Black men and black fathers should be crying, should be heartbroken over the death of Micaiah Bryant. Brian, I'm sure many are. But also know there are many that said what she received was justified. That she should have been shot and killed. She put herself in that situation. And we instead add fuel to the fire. Because our words, our beliefs, if we believe in things like that, then we pretty much are agreeing with America that the only way to stop black teens, black boys, black girls, black men, black women is to use excessive force. Because that's the American way. Micaiah Bryant, we failed you. And we must do better so that there aren't more Micaiah Bryants after this situation. We failed you. We weren't there when you needed us. We were too far away. But we will do better. We have to do better because your life is worth that and so much more. If you are listening to this podcast, be present. Be an encourager. Be someone who can break conflict. Be a person who carries peace, who believes in seeing the better, seeing the good in somebody else. Be active in your community. Be active in your households. Be investors in the lives of those who are around you. Micaiah Bryant needed that. So many other people, so many other young people that are around you need your presence and your love. Rest in heaven. Rest in peace. Micaiah Bryant, I hope that you found peace in heaven that you did not find here on earth. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. And as always, be well.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. The journey is over.
Did you hear what they said? 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 They said another brother's dead. They said he's dead, but he can't be buried. They said he's dead, but he can't be buried. Come on, come on, come on, come on. This can't be.
Adieu. Adieu, parting is such sweet sorrow.